This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, entitled Ambarish Maharaj Offended by Durvasa Muni. And we're beginning with texts 31 and 32, and we're actually going a few verses because there's only a purport on texts 39 and 40. Mahabhisheka Vidina
Mahabhisheka Vidina
Sarvo Pashkara Sampada
Sarvo Pashkara Sampada
Abhishek Yambara Kalpayar Gandamalyar Hanadibi. Translation: following the regulative principles of Maha Abhishek, Maharaj Ambarish performed the bathing ceremony for the deity of the Lord Krishna with all paraphernalia. And then he dressed the deity with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant flower garlands, and other paraphernalia for worship of the Lord. With attention and devotion, he worshipped Krishna and all the greatly fortunate brahmanas who were freed from material desires. There's no purport. Texts 33 and 35. Thereafter, Maharaj Ambarish satisfied all the guests who arrived at the house, especially the brahmanas. He gave in charity 60 crores of cows, whose horns were covered with gold plate and whose hooves were covered with silver plate. All the cows were well decorated with garments and had full milk bags. They were mild-natured, young and beautiful, and were accompanied by their calves. After giving these cows, the king first sumptuously fed all the brahmanas, and when they were fully satisfied, he was about to observe the end of Ekadasi with their permission by breaking the fast. Exactly at that time, however, Durvasa Muni, the great and powerful mystic, appeared on the scene as an uninvited guest. Text 36. After standing up to receive Durvasa Muni, King Ambarish offered him a seat and paraphernalia of worship. Then, sitting at his feet, the king requested the great sage to eat. Durvasa Muni gladly accepted the request of Maharaj Ambarish, but to perform the regulative ritualistic ceremonies, he went to the river Jamuna. There he dipped into the water of the auspicious Jamuna and meditated on the impersonal Brahman. Text 38. In the meantime, only a muhurta of the Devadasati day was left on which to break the fast. Consequently, it was imperative that the fast be broken immediately. In this dangerous situation, the king consulted learned brahmanas. Text 39 and 40. The king said, to transgress the law of respectful behavior towards the brahmanas is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dvadasi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O brahmanas, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water. In this way, after consulting with the brahmanas, the king reached this decision. According to Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also not as eating. Purport. When Maharaj Ambarish, in his dilemma, consulted the brahmanas about whether he should break the fast or wait for Durvasa Muni, apparently they could not give a definite answer about what to do. A Vaishnav, however, is the most intelligent personality. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish himself decided, in the presence of the brahmanas, that he would drink a little water, for this would confirm that the fast was broken, but would not transgress the laws for receiving a brahmana. In the Vedas it is said, apnoshtati nan naivatsitam naivatnasitam. This Vedic injunction declares that the drinking of water may be accepted as eating or as not eating. Sometimes in our practical experience, we see that some political leader adhering to satyagraha, will not eat, but will drink water. Considering that drinking water would not be eating, Maharaj Ambarish decided to act in that way. So in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear how the great Krishna conscious king, Maharaj Ambarish, consulted with the brahmanas. In Vedic culture, tradition was that a king always had a council of brahmanas with whom he would meet and take serious decisions. Generally, it was understood that because of the nature of his work, a king or a kshatriya was situated more or less in the mode of passion. Of course, the exception to the rules was Raja Rishis, fully Krishna-conscious kings like Maharaj Ambarish. They were capable of taking any and every decision by themselves because of their pure devotion. But in general, the kings were, you could say, working within or surrounded by the mode of passion. Therefore, they took counsel from those in the mode of goodness. A king had to rule, he had to manage, he had to fight, he had to conquer, he had to punish criminals, he had to give favors to his ministers, to his allies, like that. So, like this working within the modes of nature, his intelligence or his perceptions of things may sometimes be affected. Therefore, he would consult with those in the mode of goodness. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna enlightens us as to the nature of the mode of goodness. He says, tatta sattvam nirmalyavat prakashkam anamayam shuka shangena bhadnati jnana sangena chanaga. He said, O sinless one, he's speaking to Arjuna, the mode of goodness, being purer than others, is illuminating one, illuminates one, and frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in the that mode, however, become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. But the first part of that verse is significant for us, that Krishna says, being situated in the mode of goodness is illuminating. Brahmana is intelligent. He sees things as they are. That's Prabhupada's definition of intelligence. Intelligence means to see things in the proper perspective. Just like when a child's young, you may want to test their intelligence. So at a certain age, you give them a round piece of wood, and there's a square and a triangle and a round hole. And then if the kid can figure out to put it in the round hole that early in life, oh, he has some intelligence to see things in the proper perspective. So those who are situated in the mode of goodness are closer to seeing things in the proper perspective. Of course, transcendence, one sees things perfectly. But in this world, being in the mode of goodness, one can see things more clearly, illuminating. So therefore, the Brahmins or the Brahminical order is essential to giving good guidance to human society, to see things properly. What does it mean to see this material world properly? Abrahma bhuvana loka punar arvitu arjuna mamopetite kantiya punarjanma nividyate. From the highest planet down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But punarjanma nividyate, Krishna says, one who attains to Maya Bodh never takes birth again. So we all have our perspective of this world. Most people are thinking that the material world will satisfy their material desires and they'll be happy. But it's just the opposite. Dukkalayam ashashvatam. It's a temporary place full of misery. This is quite obvious to one situated in the mode of goodness. But to those in the mode of ignorance and passion, it's otherwise. So the truth is what Krishna says in Gita and what the brahmanas perceive. So Though we may be sudras, though we may be vaishyas, kshatriyas, we take guidance from the brahmanas how to get out of this material world and back home into the spiritual world. So the Brahminical order, they were guiding not only the kshatriyas. They didn't just give counsel. They weren't just there as a counsel for the brahmanas, but their advice was open to everyone. They would give public discourses. And not only the kshatriyas would come, but the vaishyas would come and the sudras would come. Everyone within that realm of vanashram dharma was interested in spiritual progress. Outside, malechas and yavanas, they may not come because they're too preoccupied with enjoying this world. But sudras would come and listen, and vaishyas would come and listen. Everyone would take guidance. Actually, a brahmana was supposed to try and elevate everyone to his platform of the mode of goodness and illumination. Prabhupada said one time, the duty of a first-class man is to make a fifth-class man also a first-class man. Therefore, when Śrīla Prabhupāda first came to America, he often stated that he wanted to establish a Brahminical order in America, and thus the world, to preach Krishna consciousness effectively. But he didn't want to do this by importing brahmanas from India. He wanted to make brahmanas from people in the West. Usually that meant the American youth. And when this news reached India, it came as a shock to the Brahminical order. As a result, sometimes Prabhupada was openly criticized in India, because there's a class of men in India who say that only those who are born in a brahmana family can become brahmanas. But that's not actually brahminical to say that, because a brahmana is a brahmana by qualification. His qualification is that he's representing the absolute truth, and he's meant to preach or teach exactly what is there in Shastra. And what does Krishna say about this idea that only one born in a Brahmin family can become a Brahmana? He says, Mam hi partha vipashvitya yepishu papayonaya. That's a very important verse. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter of me, although they're, they may be of lower birth, women, merchants, workers, can all approach the supreme destination. Now, certainly one who's born in a Brahminical family has an advantage for going back to Godhead. It's like recently there was the Olympics. And in the trials, those who, there's the trials, to, you know, they, not everybody can participate in the final race, so there's various races, and those who give the highest, get the highest scores, they're selected to perform in the final race, not everybody. So you get maybe a certain percentage. But those who score the highest scores, they get a little advantage. They get a certain track, which is a little bit advantage because of their good score. They get a better track on the six tracks around it. So in the same way, to be born in a Brahmin family is certainly an advantage because from birth, one is engaged in auspicious activities. In fact, one is welcome into the womb, which has been purified by Garbhodham Samskara. Garbhodham Samskara is a particular ritual that the husband and wife will perform before the moment of conception. It's quite elaborate, Garbhodham Samskara. Garbha means womb, and Samskara means a purification ceremony. In this age, it's not so applicable, so Śrīla Prabhupāda requested the grihasthas in our movement to simply chant 50 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra every day. That would purify the consciousness. That would purify everything. So the living entity who was attracted to the womb, the purified womb, from the very moment of conception, he was surrounded by auspiciousness. And then during the pregnancy, of course, there's so many other shamskaras or ceremonies that are performed. So then you're coming out and you're greeted, not by a kuchi kuchi koo, look at that pretty little baby, but you're greeted by the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, and so forth and so on. In the Brahminical order, so many shamskaras are performed before birth, at birth, throughout life, and even death, even after you're gone. There's a shamskar just to clean up everything in case there was some irregularity. You're gone, but there's a little something. So like that, that's Brahminical life. Purification from beginning to end. What an auspicious opportunity. In fact, Krishna says that he places the devotee who has not yet achieved perfection. Because to achieve perfection in Krishna consciousness is not an easy thing. We're singing back home, back to Godhead. Remember on the streets in the 1970s, sometimes devotees would take guitars out and we'd sing songs on the street. I remember Mangalananda used to sing, "We're going home, back to Godhead. We're going home, back," we'd be there 90 days. And after, 40 years, we're wondering if we can get to the platform of Madhya Madhukari. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. Krishna states in Gita that after many, many births, one who is in full knowledge surrenders unto me. So if we don't make it, there's nothing is lost. If you're engaged in just pure material, not pure, but if you're engaged in just material activity, everything is lost at the moment of death. But Krishna informs us that in Krishna consciousness, whatever advancement we make in this lifetime, we start where we left off. So one who has not achieved perfection in life, he may have the good fortune of taking birth in the family of wealthy merchants or brahmanas. So what is the advantage of taking birth in the family of wealthy merchants? Well, these days, not much. But in previous days, the wealthy merchants were generally engaged in auspicious ritualistic activities. They knew that prosperity didn't come just by the sweat of the brow and hard work. But prosperity was due to the fact that one engaged in yajna. Krishna says in the Gita, "In the beginning I sent forth generations of men and demigods and bless them that by the performance of this yajna, all desirable things will be bestowed upon you. All material prosperity, as well as spiritual prosperity, comes by the performance of yajna. Unless there is yajna, there cannot be any real prosperity in society, material prosperity. Or it's just fleeting, it comes and goes." So wealthy family, they knew that, and they would assist in the yajnas. They would donate a certain amount of their money or whatever was gained for the performance of yajna. And ultimately, the king was in charge of taxing people to perform these big agnihotras. So to take birth in a family of wealthy merchants meant that there was also a possibility for advancing in Krishna consciousness. Just like I remember in the early days of ISKCON, when we would go to India, and several times I had the opportunity to go with Prabhupada to wealthy homes. I remember in Mumbai, two occasions, Prabhupada was invited to the family of wealthy people. And I was expecting to see, like I did in the West, wealthy people were not so spiritual, but there was good food. But I remember the first time I walked into it was an apartment, but it was a complex apartment with many rooms, and how they received Srila Prabhupada, how the family members, the husband, the wife, and the brothers, and the sisters, and the aunts, and the uncles, and the nephews, and the children, how Prabhupada was received when he came in. The respect and the devotion and the foot bathing, and then the distribution of prasadam, and how it was served, and how it was taken, and how everything was cleaned up, and then how the program proceeded. It was a culture that I'd never seen before, and I hardly see now. It's kind of that older generation is gone, and something went with it. It's hard to explain how they were received, how Prabhupada was received, and how the whole program evolved. It was just another generation. And they were wealthy people, but they were using their wealth in the service of Hari Guru and Vaishnavas. It was something I feel privileged to see that. The culture in India is rapidly disappearing. Hopefully ISKCON can fill the vacuum. So to take birth in such a family, what to speak to take birth in a family of Brahmanas, a family of transcendentalists? Krishna says, verily, he says, the word is used, verily such a birth is rare. Not by chance one takes birth in such a family. And therefore we must give all facility to the children born into our movement. There's a verse in the Varaha Purana that in the age of Kali, demons take birth in Brahminical families. Because the Brahminical families are not really up to the standard. They're something else. Brahminical culture has also declined. But in ISKCON, hopefully, we are establishing a Brahminical order. And the children who take birth here are special souls. They may be a little naughty. Prabhupada said, when a child is naughty, it means that they're intelligent. it means there's some intelligence there. And it should be guided properly. But the children who take birth, they're our future. And they must be encouraged in every way. Because once we're gone, they'll take over the movement. And they're special souls. So that's a special birth. But that's not to say that those of lower birth cannot elevate themselves through proper association and training to the position of a brahmana and beyond. Beyond? There's sudra, there's vaishya, there's kshatriya, brahmana. There's what's beyond? There's vaishnava. Shuddha-shattva. There's the modes of ignorance, passion, and goodness, but there's what's called shuddha-shattva, or pure goodness. And a vaishnava, by dint of his devotional service to the Lord, those situated in the mode of goodness, living in the mode of goodness, Prabhupada said, mode of goodness is a stepping stone to transcendence. So being situated in the mode of goodness, but practicing the 9 processes of devotional service, one transcends even the mode of goodness. Because note that Krishna did say that there's a sense of conditioning. You become happy due to the prosperity and the knowledge you get. You may not want to advance further. But Vaishnava means shuddha-shattva. By proper association and training, even a sudra, even a rakshasa, even a malecha, even a yavana can become a brahmana or can become a Vaishnava. Even a rakshasa. Remember the old days in France, young girl, she was from Polynesia, she joined the movement and eventually was to take initiation. So the initiating guru, Bhagavan at that time, he had a darshan for the disciples and before the initiation ceremony. He was discussing, where have you come from? And, you know, what's your family? And service are you doing? And this Polynesian girl, he's saying, so what is your family history? And, oh, it goes way back, Guru Maharaj, way back. And you're so kind in accepting me because I come from a family that's very degraded. Oh, what? How were they degraded? My ancestors were cannibals. I remember Bhagavan gulped. Because Guru, it takes karma. I'm sorry to say that this cannibal blood is running through my veins. Cannibal? Yes, my great-great-grandmother, when the British were coming in their ships, sometimes they would be shipwrecked. She said sometimes there would be fights, that the British would come and to conquer the island, there would be fights, and sometimes the Indians would win. And she said that my great-great-grandmother told me that they would eat the sailors. And then she just blurted out, she said, and my grandmother told me that the fingers and the eyeballs are the tenderest, are the sweetest part of the human body. Everyone kind of cringed. She said that the meat of the bones, the fingers is very nice, and the eyes are like gulab jamuns. So Bhagavan said, stop. But I was thinking, how powerful is this mantra? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare. That those outside the shelter of Varnashram Dharma, Malechas, Yavanas, and Rakshasas, can be purified to the point of taking Diksha Harinam initiation, and eventually Brahman initiation, and eventually going back home, back to Godhead. This is actually stated by Srila Sanatana Goswami, who under the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching Krishna consciousness to all classes of men. He said, yata kancha natam yati kamsham rasa vida nataha tata diksha vida nena dvichitam jayate nunam. He says, as bell metal is turned into gold when mixed with mercury in a chemical process, someone who is properly trained and initiated by a bona fide spiritual master immediately becomes Brahmana. This is described in the Vedas. There's some shlokas which describe, not in our bhakti shastras, but like in tantric yoga shastras, that there's a process whereby bell metal can be turned into gold. Actually, I know the process. And if you want, I can tell you the mantras. It's very easy, actually. You can give up all your work now and just retire. This is a very simple process. Very simple. The yogi would take mercury. He'd take about a liter of mercury and he'd drink it. Then he'd go to sleep. And in the morning, he would urinate on bell metal, and his urine would turn the bell metal into gold. Simple, isn't it? But if you know anything about mercury, mercury is a deadly poison. But because of mantra is very powerful. Because of a certain mantra he would have, when he would drink the mercury, he wouldn't be affected by the poisonous effect. And the interaction with his bodily fluids and the mercury and the mantra, then he would urinate, and then that. So I wouldn't recommend it. Stick to your job. Better safe than sorry. But it's miraculous. When we hear about it, it sounds like fairy tale. But it's not fairy tale. It's fact. Prabhupada one time said, do you think that Srila Vyasadeva, who's writing down these Vedic literatures, is going to waste his time with fairy tales? No, he's a very sober. Dhirastattanamuyanti. Krishna says, Dehinosmin yatadehe kovanam yovanam jara. As the embodied soul passes from the body of a baby to a boy to a youth to an old man, so the soul passes into another body at death. But a sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So Srila Vyasadeva is very dhira. He's very sober. His business is to enlighten us. He's taken all the Vedas, and he's written them down because previously it was oral tradition. You would go to the ashram, you'd hear from Guruji, and then you were so smart, so pure, intelligence was so pure that you would hear once, you'd assimilate, twice, you'd understand. Third time you'd hear from Guru, you'd realize the subject matter. We're hearing again and again and again, and still we're all the assimilating. What did I hear in class today? Oh, the speaker told a nice story. I like that. But so Vyasadeva was dhira. He was sober. So he's not, whatever was written throughout all the Vedas and the Upanishads and the Itihashas and all that and Panchatantra, that is not, Prabhupada said, mythology. It's mythology, but Prabhupada would say that mythology. It is not mythology. It is all divya jnana. It is all transcendental knowledge. So when we hear these things, don't think that Srila Sanatana Goswami is referring to some Aesop's fables. Like in Europe, we have Aesop's fables. Some moral instruction made up story. This is not made up. Sanatana Goswami says, just as bell metal can be turned into gold when mixed with mercury in a chemical process, he's referring to it a technique in tantric shastra where you can actually change metal to gold. But it's nonetheless, it's miraculous. What does a miracle mean? Miracle means something that contradicts the laws of nature by divine intervention. just like Jesus Christ. He walked on water. He cured the sick. He brought the dead back to life. This is contradicting the laws of nature by divine intervention, by the intervention of the Lord who controls the laws of nature or who empowers his devotees to do so. That's miracle. All for the purpose, of course, of reviving one's spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So just as it's miraculous, wow, somebody's changed, you know, metal into gold. That's so amazing. No less amazing is this process of Krishna consciousness that can change rakshasas, mulechas and yavanas into brahmanas and into Vaishnavas. One time a newspaper reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, what is your miracle? You know, Sai Baba, he can produce the ashes and the silver chain from the back of his neck. And what is the use of the ashes? Anyway, that is nothing compared to the yogis of the past. But anyway, so he said to Swamiji, what is your miracle? I don't see you doing any, producing any miracles. So Prabhupada just waved his hand over, you know, indicating all his students. He said, this is my miracle. That all these young boys and girls who were addicted to sinful activities are now Vaishnav devotees of the Lord. This is my miracle. And that is a miracle. But how did Prabhupada do it? By waving his hand? No. He introduced us to the process of Krishna consciousness. Ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha ta bhajana kriya nata nivriti syat. The process of coming in contact with the devotees, getting some faith in their association, and then bhajana kriya. Engaging in the process, following the rules and the regulations of devotional service. Rules means the positive things and regulation means the negative, giving up the negative. Of which, Prabhupada summarized, the positive means chanting 16 rounds every day. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Nama, Hare. And negative, he summarized as following the four regulative principles. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex and gambling. It's a summary. But there's many rules and regulations that we're following. But that's what it means to become a brahmana. Plutarch, who was a Greek philosopher, he said character is simply habit long practiced. So if one is born in a low-class family by dint of his previous impious activity, if he's determined and willing to be trained by a bona fide spiritual master, he can become brahmana or more. And if he manifests the qualities of a brahmana, he must be accepted as a brahmana by qualification. Once there was a teacher, brahminical teacher, who opened a school for students to come and learn brahminical life. And one boy appeared at the door and the teacher said, so, you are born in a Brahmin family? I do not know, sir. You do not know? What are you doing here? Well, just go ask your mother if you were born in a Brahmin family. He went home and he asked his mother, Mata, who was Pita? And she was honest. She said, in those days I was not acting properly and I don't know who your father was. I don't know. I was engaged with many men, so I don't. So he went back and he told the teacher, teacher, my mother does not know who my father is. So the teacher said, you are qualified to come into school because you're honest. And honesty is one of the important qualities of a brahmana. So by qualification, he accepted him into school. And there's many examples in Vedic literature of persons who were born in lower families who became brahmanas. And the example that always comes to my mind is our Narada Muni. Narada Muni, in one of his lives, was born as a sudra to the son, as the son of a maidservant. But later, you know the story, he became an exalted devotee of the Lord. He got the association of Vaishnavas. He got their prasad. Literally, the prasad from the table. He asked one of the Mahis, pulling on the yatri, Swamiji, give me some gulab. So this Bhaktivedanta, he took the bite and he gave it to the boy, and Narada said, at that moment, the very nature of the transcendentalist became attractive to me. I just love that verse. At that moment, the very nature of transcendence became, he took some prasad, he got some mercy. We said the other day that there's three ways that one can make quick advancement. And we want to make quick advancement because life is short. You get the water which has washed the feet of a pure devotee. You get the dust of his feet, and you get the remnants of this prasad. Of course, that prasad also takes the form of seva, or service. If we embrace the service of our spiritual master, then we are, the opportunity is there for also for quick advancement. Not that we don't do service and just look for some dust and water and food. But that is there. So not to accept this is, it means not to accept the all-powerful nature of the Lord to transform the heart. Brahmanda brahmati konya bhagavan jeev guru krishna prasad pai bhakti lat beach. We've been wandering since we left the spiritual world, been wandering in this material creation from one brahmanda universe to the next, from one species of life, from one body, but guru krishna prasad pai bhakti lat beach. Somehow, the Lord, generally the devotee, have intervened out of their causes mercy. We didn't ask them. No one wrote a letter and asked Prabhupada to come to the West, but he came. And he intervened. He just intervened and changed our destiny by giving us this holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. When Prabhupada first came back to India after being in the West for a few years, I think it was 71, he had a heart attack, so he was going back to recover. He said he may not come back. He said in his absence, Lord Nrisimhadev would protect us. But he requested the devotees in Los Angeles at that time to carry on as he had instructed us. And he felt even with that brief association, the whole movement could expand and to the degree that Mahaprabhu wanted it. But when he came back, one of his godbrothers commented, you have initiated these Westerners? They're so sinful. How they can be purified? He gave the analogy of a wine-stained pot. And when you do a yagya, everything has to be pure. So you take a pot to be used in the yagya. But if it's been used to hold wine, which is an impure substance, even you wash it and scrub it, no. It cannot be used in the yagya. So he compared the Western boys and girls in particular to wine-stained pots because they'd engaged in so many sinful activities because they were hearing about the hippies in the West. So much sinful meat, eating, and intoxication, promiscuous sex. So how you can give the Maha Mantra to these people because their hearts are just full of so many sinful reactions. Lifetimes. How is it possible that they can be delivered? So Prabhupada shot back. He said, what is more powerful? A heart full of sinful reactions from millions of lives or one holy name of Krishna? So because his godbrother was a Vaishnava, Gaudiya Vaishnava, he had to accept, yes. One of Krishna's names is infinitely more powerful than all the sins of this world, of all the people of this world, since the time of creation. Just one holy name chanted purely can counteract that reaction. Mamchayo namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Because there's no difference between the name of Krishna and Krishna. So it's possible to elevate someone from a low birth to become a brahmana. But there's an authorized process. It's not a cheap thing. Mahatma Gandhi tried to elevate fallen people not by engaging them in the process, ado shuddha tata sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, not by engaging them in bhajana kriya. He just changed their names. He took pity on the poor classes of India and said, they are also God's children. So they should have the right to enter in the temple and worship their father, to do puja to the deities. But instead of recommending the process of purification, he simply changed their name to Harijans. Jana means like child, like we had our Vishnujana Maharaj, Vishnujan Maharaj. Vishnujan means a child of God. So he changed their name to Harijans. Harijan means children of God. And by changing their name to Harijan, now they're qualified to... No. It's not by changing a person's name, not even by changing a person's dress, that a person becomes elevated. Prabhupada said, you can put a dog on the throne and call him king. Woof, 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 king. Woof, woof, king. But still, when you throw a bone in front of the throne, the king, the dog will jump down and eat the bone. So you put a dog on the throne and call him king, it doesn't, no. So it's not by changing, this is, Gandhi had the sentiment, of course. He had the sentiment, but he didn't listen to Prabhupada. Because he got a very elevated position, practically brought down the English government, or maybe Subhash Chandra Bose. It's a debate, but anyway. So Prabhupada wrote him at one time, and he was in his position, you know, of fame. He said, now is the time to preach Bhagavad Gita. You are in the position now that people will listen to you. And this, these are the words of the Lord. This Gita, this is the medicine that's required to solve all problems, individual, society, world. But Gandhi did not reply. So he had the sentiment, but he didn't have the knowledge, the authorized process as it's given in Shastra. So simply changing a name is not enough. The real thing is Krishna consciousness. Yas yasti bhaktir bhavati akinchana savayagunas tatta samashate shura. It's stated that one who attains devotional service to the Supreme Lord develops all the good qualities of the demigods. Devotional service is authorized. Prabhupada often says it's authorized. It's dharmantu sakshat bhagavat panitam, as we quoted the other day. Dharma comes from God, and it's disseminated by God's representatives who preach it tel quel, as we say in French, as it is. And they themselves are the proper example. And if one is fortunate to come into contact with such a devotee or a society of devotees who are living under the guidance of an acharya, who has, according to time, place, and circumstance, applying those eternal instructions of the Lord, then that low-born person can become a first-class devotee of the Lord. And what is the proof? Phalina Parichate. You judge something by the result. You just visit any ISKCON temple. And there's so many devotees. And they may or may not have been born in Brahminical families. For the most part, they're not. But by the authorized process, they came to Shatva and then to Shura Shatva. Prabhupada told the story one time of a there was a plague in Calcutta, 1930s, and people were dying like flies everywhere, and no one could stop it. So the city ordinance, they figured that the disease was as a result of so many rats who were infested with the disease, the plague. So they said that anyone who collected a rat would be given 5 paisa to bring it to a certain place, and then every rat you get 5 paisa. So there was one ambitious young boy, he brought like 20 rats in. He was from a very poor family. And then for 20 rats, he got 5 paisa for each one, so he collected a rupee or something. So then he took that rupee to the other side of town, and he bought a piece of cloth. And he took it to another part of town and sold it for a profit. And then he took that profit and went back and got more cloth, and then sold that for a profit, and then so on. To make a long story short, this is history. This is an actual story. That person later in his life became one of the wealthiest persons in India. He had a business which produced saris, silk saris. Prabhupada told that story. So from being extremely poor, he became very wealthy. So actually by taking up devotional service, even if one is unqualified, Prabhupada said one can become better than a Brahmin. Because Brahman is the mode of goodness, but Vaishnava again is in the mode of transcendence. Mam cha yo vibhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuya kalpate. The one who engages in devotional service, does it go, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of nature and comes to the level of Raman. In that sense, a devotee is even higher. One time in Vrindavan, the devotees were visiting a temple, and the priest was impressed with their kirtan and so forth. So he blessed them. He said, in your next lifetime, because you are so enthusiastic here at the temple, you will take birth as a brahmana in Vrindavan and you can worship the deity. Well, they were excited. So they went back and told Prabhupada the story. He said, what? He said, you go back and tell them that if they nicely worship the deity in the temple, in their next lifetime they can be born in the West and be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master and preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So do it. But one who's been elevated like that to this miraculous process of Krishna consciousness, as simple as it is, that taken from the it's like the phoenix rising. Every devotee is like the phoenix rising. The phoenix is born from the dust and the dirt, and destruction. So our destroyed lives, because of our sinful ways and our broken families and so forth, that we've come to the point of being devotees, Brahmins, devotees, temple presidents, regional secretaries, GBCs, sannyasis, gurus. We're part of the miracle. We should never be proud of the fact and advertise ourselves as more advanced than others. A devotee should always be very meek and very humble and use that opportunity to elevate others. If a Brahmin or a devotee is proud of his position and doesn't strive to help others, his pride will be the cause of his fall down. And this is actually how the Brahminical community became fallen in India. And it's specifically how Kali entered this age. Because this is Kali's age, but how did Kali enter into human society? He first influenced Sringi, a young Brahmana boy, to curse Maharaj Parikshit, a great devotee king. Sringi was a Brahmin in training, and he could curse, but he couldn't retract the curse. And he made the mistake in his youth, exuberance, he not being so pure, he cursed Maharaj Parikshit. And Prabhupada said, this is the beginning of the decline of Brahminical society. In order to influence human society, Kali first attacks the spiritual orders of society, and by doing so, he destroys the entire spiritual fabric of society. Just like to kill someone, the best is just shoot them in the head. If there's no head, there's no body. So if there's no Brahminical order, there's no one to guide the other social orders, and everything falls apart. So Brahminical, we know, I've heard, I don't know if it's documented, but it's stated that Jesus went to India. There's some books written like that, how Jesus went to India during that period of life where he had disappeared for 30 years. He went to India, they say, and he studied in Jagannath Puri and he imbibed the teachings, which he later took back to his Nabhavishya Purana. There's references like that to Isha, the son of God, imbibing the Vedic teachings and delivering the people of his land. But it's said that he left Jagannath Puri at one point, being disgusted by the conduct of the brahmanas. Brahmanas became proud of their elevated position and used it to abuse others rather than elevate others. So we as members of ISKCON must be the Brahmins that Prabhupada envisioned when he came to America, and always exhibit the highest standard of purity. This means that we have to actually imbibe the qualities of a Brahmin. Not that after so many years, being in the movement for so many years, that we are entitled to the Brahminical thread. not a question of time. It's a question of purification. Sometimes I've given brahminical initiation along with first initiation. I've done that a couple of times. I know Prabhupada did it on a couple of occasions as well. Particularly to Gurukul students who were born in the movement, who were trained in the movement, who went through the whole system of Gurukula and survived. And after Gurukul continued with Krishna consciousness, didn't become involved in sinful activity, didn't become wayward souls. But Gurukulis who took full advantage of their birth and their family and their training and accepted responsibility and became active members of the movement. Sometimes we worry that when we pass away, the Prabhupada disciples, that who will inherit this movement and continue with it? Just like Prabhupada was worried if we would, as his disciples, actually be able to carry on what he alone was doing, that all of us together, if we could do it. And we faltered in many ways and made many mistakes, but somehow, by his mercy, it's still going on. So we also sometimes, now that we're in the autumn of our years, we have at best, 10 years or 15 years left, the Prabhupada disciples? That's a very short time. Will the second generation be able to continue in the same way as we are doing? That is the worry. Will the second generation carry the ball, so to speak, the relay, like there's a relay, you give the baton to the second runner, the third runner, the fourth runner. So we will pass on in due course of time, and we'll pass the baton on to the second generation. Our anxiety as leaders in ISKCON is if there will be enough devotees to take on. So when I personally see, especially a Gurukul student who was born in a devotee family, raised, went to Gurukul, and after Gurukul didn't get lost in the vast ocean of material existence, but is accepting service in our movement, then sometimes I give Brahman initiation at first initiation. I've done it on 3 or 4 times. And those 4 devotees have not left. They've accepted service nicely. First and second initiation to a 14-year-old or 15-year-old or a 20-year-old who's gone through that process. Because I see that there, those brahminical qualities are there. And we have to maintain that highest standard of purity for ISKCON to go on. So Brahman initiation isn't awarded just because one's been in the movement for a long time. Brahman initiation is awarded if one demonstrates the qualities of a Brahman. And what are the qualities of a Brahman that we strive for? We're Vaishnavas. We're better than Brahmanas. Well, to be a Vaishnava, you have to be a Brahman. So what are the qualities that we focus on so that we remain pure and we can do our service? Samo damas tapau socham shantar arjavam evacha jnanam viganam ashtikam brahma karma shvabhavajam. Anyone who's taking Brahman initiation should know this verse and the qualities and demonstrate them. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, and wisdom and righteousness. These are the natural qualities by which the brahmanas work and help others. So when one is ready, he or she can get the Gayatri Mantra. Nowadays, you can find the Gayatri Mantra on the internet. You can even find the Sannyas Mantra on the internet. I was shocked. But that doesn't mean anything. You may find those mantras, the 7 Gayatri Mantras, you may find them on the internet, but you have to hear them from your guru. Padma Purana says, Sampradaya vihine ye mantras te nishpala mata. That if one is not connected with the bona fide disciplic succession, whatever mantra he chants will not have the desired effect. So you have to hear that mantra from your guru. And what does it do? Gayatri Mantra purifies the mind, Prabhupada said, of doubt and speculation. And in a purified state, one can chant Hare Krishna and get the maximum results. Actually, we understand the most important is the Hare Krishna Mantra. Kaler dosha nidhe rajan asti eka mahaguna kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangha paramrajat. That is the mantra for the sage. It's the most important mantra. Even if one doesn't get Gayatri mantra, one can still go back to Godhead. One can still go back to Godhead, even if one doesn't have the Gayatri mantra. In the 11th canto, Sri Havi says to King Nimi, by chanting the holy names of the Lord, one comes to the stage of love of Godhead. Then the devotee is fixed in his vow as an eternal servant of the Lord, and he gradually becomes very attached to a particular form of the Lord. His heart then melts in ecstatic love. He laughs very loudly or cries and shouts. Sometimes he sings and sometimes he dances like a madman, for he's indifferent to public opinion. That's the effect of chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. But good to have the Gayatri Mantra because it reminds us to remain situated in the mode of goodness. It strengthens us. So these mantras, Gayatri, Maha Mantra, they're very, very powerful. And we should take advantage. We should chant the 16 rounds every day. And if you get the Gayatri Mantra, you should chant 3 times a day. Become purified and drag as many conditioned souls back home with us, back with Srila Prabhupada. Back home. Back to Godhead. Grantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Aki Srila Prabhupada Aki Itai Gaur Premanandi. Hare Krishna. Thank you.